Good afternoon. The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Thank you for your patience. It's always fun on the last day that we can take action on Senate bills to figure out what we're doing. So we're going to take up digital billboards first. Open a work session on Senate Bill 639. Zach, if you could remind us, please, once again.
Senate Bill 639 creates a definition of a digital billboard. We have the dash 8, 13, and 14 in front of us.
So, am I remembering right that the 8s are essentially superseded by the 14s? Is that right?
I don't know if they're mutually exclusive.
Okay, but the 14s are essentially the 8s with the retire language and 250 square feet. Is that right?
I believe so.
Okay. So perhaps it would make sense to ask Mr. Barrows and Mr. Sandblast if you'd like to come up and talk again about the 14s, just very quickly, to help the committee recall the discussion, what has led us to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dave Barrows, Channel Outdoor. And you are correct, Mr. Chair, that I came before this committee a week ago, whenever it was, and walked you through the Dash 8 amendments, and the Dash 14s are identical to the Dash 8s with the exception of the term you discussed, which is where it said turn in relocation credits. That's sort of a misleading term because there's no... We don't have a piece of paper to turn in. Relocation credits are on a long piece of paper at the Department of Transportation. So, to clarify, the suggestion was that we use the term retire the relocation credit, and that's what this—that's all the 14s do.
And that's on page 2, line 18.
And a whole bunch of other places.
At least there, yes. Thank you.
Yes, et cetera, et cetera. But that is the only change that was made.
Mr. Sandblast, you had another one?
Yes, it also included a new
section. And if you could start with your name, too, please.
Terry Sandblast.
Thanks.
That was already in.
Was Section 8 already in?
In the 8s.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry to...
No problem. No problem.
Family disagreement here, but yeah, that was already in. Okay. The Travel Council language that you wanted, Mr.
Right.
Chairman.
Right. Okay. Okay, so those are the Dash 14s amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopts the Dash 14 amendments to Senate Bill 639.
Thank you. Representative Bence has moved the Dash 14 amendments to Senate Bill 639. I'd be shocked if there wasn't some discussion. Is there any? I'm happy to be shocked, by the way. But Representative Widener.
I have some Dash 13 amendments that I wouldn't mind having some people come up and
certainly. We're happy to have that discussion after we've taken this after this vote. My understanding is that Dash 13s and Dash 14s are structured in a way that they're not mutually exclusive. So, if the committee desired that outcome, they could both be adopted. Representative Sheehan, then Representative Lindsay.
Just really quick, Mr. Chair, is it the intention of the committee to work both the Dash 14 and Dash 13 amendments today?
We are in a work session, and I intend to entertain the discussion of both. I couldn't, of course, speak for the will of the entire committee, but I certainly expect, as I just indicated, Representative Widener, that there'll be an opportunity to discuss the Dash 13s.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Lindsay.
Yeah, two questions to the co-chairs, actually. What was the vote in the Senate on this bill?
I don't recall. I think it was... A large majority. Zach, do you have that?
I don't have it on me. A large majority.
Mr. Chair, I can answer the question.
Please.
29-1.
29-1. Second question is, why would we not just pass it out as they presented it to us?
Well, I can speak for myself that I have some other interests and some other things that I'd like to see in the bill.
Which are the two for one?
Which are the things that are in the Dash 14s? That's one of them, yes.
Chairman Pence.
Yes, Representative Lindsay.
Same question.
What is it? What's your question?
Why would we not just pass out what the Senate gave to us? Why should we amend it here?
I think the most important thing that we can get done today is that we end up with video billboards. They would be dramatically helpful to my district in drawing traffic off highways and having them shop in our small towns. So when we look at what's before us, the most important thing is that we get business into our small towns. I think these billboards will accomplish that purpose. When I pull back and resting on my vast legislative experience of 3 years, it strikes me that one wants to listen carefully with to those that are much more experienced than I, such as Mr. Barrows and others, and ask them what they think is most likely to get through this House and through this most interesting group of folks. And it strikes me that you can speak for yourself, of course, Mr. Barrows, but their negotiating powers are excellent, in my observation. And I leave it to them to protect their interests. My understanding from them is that the Dash 14s are acceptable, given other alternatives like no digital billboards. And so to me, this is an amendment that accomplishes my main goal, getting digital billboards alongside roads so we can have more economic activity, and probably rises to the level of being most likely to pass. Does that respond to your question?
Yes, and I'll just make a statement as well. Let's just make it very clear. What's striking to me is that this came out 29-1 out of the Senate. We're in the business of building a consensus here. And my opinion here is that some things are that plain vanilla bill that was sent to us from the Senate could probably pass out of here 8-0, if not 7-1, if we were just to vote on it. And I think that what we're doing here is we're holding something hostage in exchange for something else. That's striking to me. That's very striking to me. I'd rather just vote on the bill that the Senate sent to us. Let's build a consensus instead of kicking an anthill, which these amendments are doing.
Further discussion? Representative Smith.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, as you and I think committee members may know, I have some remaining concerns about the base bill, but do want to applaud your work, the co-chair's work, on the Dash 14s and trying to make it a better bill. And I think it's the kind of, you know, my own view is that we have two chambers so that we can tinker. And if we're tinkering for some myopic interest, then it's not our duty. But if we're tinkering to manifest our fiduciary duty, is the highest purpose to which we sit. And I think you've sat in that purpose around this bill, and I applaud you for it.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Wyden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm supportive of the bill, just plain the way it came from the Senate. But one of the things I think we're called to do is to look out for the best interests of all Oregonians. And when it gets into it, one of the things I saw that we are missing is representing the property owners in this as well. And that's why my amendments came about, was to basically look out for the rights of property owners of a bill that passed the Senate with at least 24 aye votes and didn't even get a work session over here last time and became collateral damage, I guess, or I'm not sure what happened with it at that point. We also have taken into the interest of what the committee wants with on land use issues of not only protecting the landowner, but the preemption that the cities and counties were looking for, too, to look out for them as well in the sign business. So it's looking out for the interest of all and not one, and I think that's what we're called to do.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm, as Mr. Barrows knows, I've been kind of a holdout on electronic billboards. Had my perceived notion of what they were and wasn't very happy with them, so I ignored that issue for a year or so, a session or so. I've come to believe that these probably are the best way to go. But knowing that, I think it's fair, since they have much more capacity to advertise, that in the meantime we can maybe get rid of a little more clutter, visual clutter, along our highways, and that's pretty much a normal practice with local governments as they negotiate with them to maybe do a little trading four spots, so I think it's only appropriate that we start looking out for our visual, our organ, and how people view it as they come into the state, and the fewer billboards there are, in my mind, the better off we'd be.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to echo some of the comments from the previous speaker and also add that public interest includes public safety, and I appreciate that there's been an acknowledgement of the public safety as well as design aesthetics in an urban as well as rural settings. Oregon's scenic beauty is a major asset to this state and to its economy. I also want to acknowledge, as I've said, I think I've said previously, that I don't object to digital billboards. I think the technology is good, and I certainly enjoyed understanding the latest technology, which is a fairly automated way of making sure that the brightness is not inappropriate, and that we have signs that are appropriately illuminated, not illuminated from the outside, but just the way they work is appropriate to the surroundings. So I appreciated all of that. I'd like to make sure that the way the 14s are drafted takes care of something that appeared to be something that came to our attention that perhaps wasn't covered on the Senate side, which was what appeared to be an unintended consequence of a certain sign size category applied to some companies and not to other companies, and we tried to address that problem. And I believe I'm getting a signal from the audience that the Dash 14 does include trying to fix that particular situation. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Lindsay, another?
I do have another one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we truly want to cut down the clutter, which already compared to several other states, Oregon is de minimis, then why not, instead of 2-for-1, why not 5-for-1? I don't know. That's just a random number.
Aye.
How about 8-for-1? How about 10-for-1?
No.
Okay. So that's number one. Number two is, should this fail, it's at the expense of the environment. Don't we want digital billboards? Why not pass it through the environment? Why not pass it through as it was presented to us from the Senate? Because if this amendment fails, if the bill dies, then it's at the expense of the environment, because what is up there today will remain there today. Well, let's push through what was given to us from the Senate, and we'll get more environmentally friendly billboards.
Thank you, Representative Lindsay. Is there further discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a point that took up quite a bit of our conversations, and it had to do with the paragraph 8 on page 3 of the Dash 14s. And I just kind of wanted to hear from those in the sign business some words of assurance or your plans when it comes to these billboards being scattered across the state. And what I really want to hear is, as you may recall, this allows the billboards to move and circumvents the 100-mile rule. And my concern has been that we would have a flocking of billboards away from rural areas and to the more populated areas. And I think my concerns about this were somewhat resolved or reduced when I heard that one of your sign company's goals is to have a statewide presence. And this, of course, would require that the rural areas receive at least a couple of signs. Sounds odd I'd be here begging for signs when Representative Smith is more than willing to give a few away. But maybe you could address that concern.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, we appreciate your sentiments, and we wish everybody would have that desire to have billboards retained in their area. Our goal would be to have coverage statewide with these digital billboards. There's a lot of public benefit to do that. There's also a business benefit. Each company operates its businesses differently. We're more in the valley, west of the Cascades. Other companies are up and down the valley. There are companies east of the mountains. Meadows Outdoor is services, and Lamar Services and CBS Services, those other areas other than the valley. I think all our goals, and I speak for each of the company in terms of our membership, our association, they're all supportive of the goal of digital and using that technology not only for business but for the benefit of the public. Your concern about will there be a, if you will, a removal of signs to construct signs elsewhere, I would point out to you that the bill itself creates a dichotomy, if you will, between owners and the ones that are located elsewhere than the valley and the west side of the mountains are some of those folks that would not be required by the bill to remove a sign in order to build a digital. And so from that perspective, I think those companies would take advantage of that aspect of this Dash 14 to keep the signs, say, in Eastern Oregon or Central Oregon and other locations. So I think all of that works together as a whole.
And thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quick, just kind of curious, if someone was to offer to buy a sign credit from you today, what would you sell one for if somebody else wanted to get into the business?
I can't answer that question. You would have to take a look at what it's for, where it's going to go. Do we really want to sell it? I mean, there's a lot of ways of looking at it. We'd have to have it appraised. So I can't answer that question. It could be 50, could be 100. Those are thousands of dollars.
How many credits do you currently have, and how many signs do you currently have up?
We have, if I recall correctly, 296 credits on the state routes, and we have 300 and some structures, standing structures. I think that's the answer.
Good.
Follow up?
I may follow up just to get this clear. So there's 300 credits that are available, or 296 that aren't being used, and you have 300 signs up.
Right.
So about 50%.
Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to declare a potential conflict of interest since we're in a work session. I have an advertising agency, and this is about advertising.
Thank you. We'll note that for the record, and if the bill makes it that far, I suggest you make the same declaration on the floor. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other short comment that I failed to include earlier. I also want to acknowledge that factored into my thinking is appreciation for the industry's willingness to use at least some of the time on a digital billboard for public service. This could be for an emergency alert, or it could be for other public service type uses. Community interest and community value. And that's another thing that's possible with the new technology that is not so much possible with a traditional billboard.
Under this, it'd make less of those. Representative
Lindsay.
More, right?
Representative Lindsay,
yes.
Did you want to make a comment?
I did. Thank you.
Okay. So the motion on the floor is to adopt the Dash 14 amendments. Could we please have a roll call vote?
On the amendments, yes.
Representative
Weiner? No.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Representative
Lindsay?
No.
And Chair
Beyer?
Yes.
Chair
Reed? Aye. Motion having received the required majority is declared passed. The Dash 14s are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Widener, would you like to talk about the Dash 13s?
I think we have people here to testify in favor of the 13s.
Would you like to introduce them, or do you have someone in mind that you'd like to have come up?
Is
So Representative Honeycutt, I'm promoting him. So
Ms. Honeycutt?
Mr. Honeycutt and Ms. Squires back there.
Squires, okay. And Mr. Doherty, looks like.
Okay.
We'll be more timely.
Any opening comments from you? These are your notes, I think?
Yes. These came about from when we were taking testimony last time, and we realized that the preemption was something that was a concern of the committee, so we wanted to address the preemption issue, and that's where these amendments came into play, and I believe that the cities and counties are neutral on the bill at this point, and they can
come up on the amendments.
Okay. And they are more than welcome to come up here and tell me if I'm wrong. So okay. With that, I'll let...
Who would like to start?
I guess I will. Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, Representative speaking in support of the Dash 13 amendments. Representative Widener contacted me a couple of weeks ago on this issue, informed me of the amendments that were being made to this bill, and asked our thoughts. Our organization, as you know, represents property owners and private property rights. I've reviewed the amendments and believe that they do a excellent job of leveling the playing field and encouraging competition to give the property owner some negotiating ability that the property owner currently doesn't have when a lease is terminated for a billboard. So we're very supportive of these. I think they make an excellent addition to the bill and certainly are helpful for the rights of the private property owner upon whose land the billboard is located.
Thank you. Who's next?
Hasina Squires. Thank you, Co-Chairs Reed and Bench. On behalf of Icon Group, just like to start by saying I took very seriously Representative Smith's comment in the last hearing about the concern on preempting city and county authority. As Representative Beyer and Nathanson both expressed additional concern on that, and really did go back and think about potential ways to craft an amendment that would be beneficial to property owners and perhaps level the playing field for other individuals to compete in this marketplace, which is what we believe this amendment would do. And I'm pleased to bring to you the Dash 13 amendments, which I believe goes a long way to potentially assuage some of the concerns about preemption for cities and counties. I have spoken with City of Portland and League of Oregon Cities, and they have both indicated that they do not object to the Dash 13 amendments.
Happy to hear opening comments from you, Mr. Doherty, if you'd like. I'm hoping that someone can walk us through how these amendments work as well.
Would it be easier if I just answered questions?
That's fine, but now that you've spoken, we need you to identify yourself.
Chris Doherty for representing Icon Group.
Okay, thank you. So who would be the right person to walk us through how they work?
Co-Chairs Reed and Benz, I can attempt to do that. So page 1 of the bill, section 6, indicates that owner of an outdoor advertising sign may not remove the sign from the site if the landowner provides the sign owner with written notice of the landowner's intent to purchase the sign. So really that's the goal at what this particular amendment is getting at, is giving the property owner the ability to purchase that sign from the sign company and at the time that a lease is terminated. So we believe that this would not interfere with existing contractual rights. There would be written notice that would be provided that the sign would be intended to be removed and on which day, the date. Then there would be an appraisal. So I'm now on page 2, line 26, an appraisal of the replacement value of the sign as it exists on the surface above the ground. And then some provisions about appraisal and how that would work. Also, turning to page 3, section 5, if the sign owner disputes the replacement value, they can get their own appraisal, and then if there's a dispute about that, the two values would be averaged. That's, in general, the walking through the steps of the amendment.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how do credits work with this? Is this when somebody, their lease ends or, you know, whatever, and it's going to transfer ownership, is there a credit that the sign company gets back, or does that stay with the sign, or are they buying it from the landowner?
Co-Chair Reed, Benson, Buyer Representative Sheehan. The sign company that currently owns the structure upon lease termination would receive a relocation credit for the existing permit that was currently with that structure, just as they do now. The structure would remain technically not as an outdoor advertising sign until such time as the then landowner contracted with another owner of a relocation credit that would then make an application to ODOT and turn that relocation credit into a permit to be located on that structure again as it had previously been, keeping in mind that that structure would be a conforming sign under state law.
Follow-up? I think I'm good. Thanks.
Any other questions? Representative Vince.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's been a lot of discussion in the last day about the different positions legally that might be asserted given this situation. And I actually have, now I have a battling memos, one from Perkins Coie and one is from Schwabe Williamson, both diametrically opposed, not surprising. And but the issue here to me seems to be how to make sure we protect the landowner. That's hugely, hugely important. But in this odd situation, we have the rights of the sign owner, which come into play. And I had in our discussions yesterday asked if there wasn't some constitutional issue. I'm informed by one of these memos that indeed there is, in protection of the sign owner's rights. And so I can't help but think, as I look at the situation, that the landowner is the victim of this unfortunate declaration by a city or municipality of a non-conforming use, and that the sign company is using that to its advantage. On the other hand, I can understand that, but for the sign company having happened along, the benefit that now might accrue to the landowner would might not otherwise exist. And so as I look at it, I think, there seems to be a basic unfairness here, but I'm not sure that the bill addresses it as completely as I would like it to be. The dash 13s address it as nicely as I would like them to. Ultimately, I think there's an injustice being worked on the landowner, but I'm not sure exactly of the size of the injustice or the remedy. And so in looking at this, it seems to me that it deserves attention, but it deserves more than it's gotten thus far. That's my opinion on it. Now, I have the three of you. You're on the side of the landowners. Your best argument, I'd love to hear it. And I have seen the memo from Perkins Coie on it. It's very interesting. But if you have something to add that you think is the killer argument, I'd love to hear it.
Chair Reed, Co-Chair Beyer, Co-Chair Bence. The simplest way that I can think to explain it is as a sign owner myself. I may or may not have originally placed the particular sign that we're talking about on the property. The landowner that owns the property now may or may not be the landowner that owned the property when the sign was originally placed there. But there is today a lease agreement that has established a certain expectancy for a period of time for a return on an investment from the sign owner's perspective, me. When my lease agreement expires, I have no further expectation than to be able to take the salvage, the sign structure, the portions of which I can, and take those with me if I choose to do so.
I suggest you just move the microphone a little bit further away from you so it won't distort quite as much.
Okay. So as of the date the lease is terminated, my rights to continue there, I've also terminated. All I have left to do is spend my resources to go remove that structure. It's going to come down. It's going to either be stored at my yard, or I'm going to salvage it at a steel yard. So what this bill does is say, and the landowner at that point, not to their desire, not in a voluntary manner in many cases,
is also losing an opportunity to continue, even to offer the right to continue. So what the bill does is say, how much is what you are going to remove from the property anyways valued at today for you to go and replace that, to purchase all of those components again, so that so that the effect is the same, except for you're not actually spending the resource to actually remove it. This appears to be the most positive solution for all the parties. And there is a right to dispute.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? I don't see any. Thank you very much. I think we would like to hear, as has already been mentioned, we've at least co-chair and I are in receipt of some analysis of this question. So we'd like to hear from Mr. Barrows, and if you'd like to bring Mr. Sandblast with you, to hear your perspective on these amendments as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dave Barrows, Clear Channel Outdoor lobbyist. Like you, Mr. Chair, we've been in the possession of these amendments for just about 4 hours, and we've had some difficulty sorting through all the issues. There's a number of things that are of concern. As Mr. Sandblast said when we were up here before, every company has its own business model. And perhaps it is Icon's business model that when the lease period ends, they remove the sign. It is my belief that that is not the business model of any other company in the state, that they all extend the lease. It's a new negotiation, a new discussion. I know for a fact, because I've asked, that Clear Channel in Oregon has never taken a sign down, except when ordered to by the Department of Transportation or city or county because of changing of the highway or whatever. The suggestion was made a couple of days ago in a conversation that this bill was only, that these amendments, excuse me, the Dash 13 amendments were only going to apply to non-conforming signs. That is not accurate. This applies to all signs. Applies to every sign in the state.
Maybe I should hold this for the end, but I'd like to hear how that actually works. I meant to ask that as well. So now or later, if you can take us through how that does or doesn't work, that'd be helpful. If you want to make your general sort of...
Well, let me just make a couple more, and then, sure. If I may, Mr. Chair, and then Mr. Sandblast is the expert on that subject. It is very bothersome that the reference in these Dash 13 amendments are to replacement value, not fair market value. Those numbers are very different. It is unusual to have only two appraisers involved. One selected by, for the first appraiser selected by the landowner, and then if the sign company, which is mandated to sell its sign, not permitted, not asked, not anything, mandated by state law to sell its sign, it would then have the right, if it didn't like the landowner's appraisal, to get another appraisal. These and the winning number will be the average of the two. My guess is they won't be very close together. As I indicated to you, Mr. Chairman, in my 25 years of representing the savings and loan industry, I've been involved in a lot of bills dealing with appraisal of property. And always, my recollection is that always there were three appraisers, one selected by each of the parties, and then a third selected by the two appraisers. That's the way I had hoped these amendments would read. Not dueling appraisers, but a real threesome that would get the job done. The issue of wall signs, I'm not sure. They're supposedly to be excluded. I think they probably are, but I'm not certain. This would be found on page 3 in the last two lines. It's difficult to go through all the things that present difficulties to the majority of the sign business in this short period of time. And our pledge to you, Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Sandblast makes his comments about the specifics of how the deal works, is that should the committee not adopt the 13 amendments, we have polled all the members of the Outdoor Advertising Association, and they are all in agreement that they would be willing to sit down in good faith and with all parties involved and try to work through something that would be helpful to all the parties and that would not be a winner and loser situation. Because my final comment is this, Mr. Chairman, when the landowner buys this sign, they're going to have to shell out somewhere in the multiple of tens of thousands of dollars. These are not inexpensive structures. Most people, I couldn't afford it. Most people can't. But there will be another company who will come and say, not to worry, we will pay for it. And then you transfer title to us, which this bill would not prohibit. So no signs come down. The sign stays up. It's now not owned by the landowner. It's owned by a different company. So what the state is doing with these amendments, or proposing to do, is to intercede between two corporations and pick a winner and a loser. And I would suggest that needs a lot of discussion and thoughtful consideration, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate the chance to respond.
Imagine we're going to have a number of questions, and I have one too, but I'll wait for the end. I know Richard Weiner has some too, but let's hear from
you. So what was it?
Well, particularly I was interested because in my conversations, and Representative Weiner, you're welcome to correct me here, my understanding was that the Dash 13s were intended to apply only to non-conforming signs. I heard Mr. Barrows say he believes it would apply to all of them, so I wanted to understand how that
applies just to non-conforming signs?
My understanding was that the intent, I mean, perhaps I should, rather than speculate, Representative Weiner, was it your intent that they apply only to non-conforming signs? Okay. So my question was on what basis you're concluding that it would apply to all signs?
Well, if I turn to Section 8, Mr. Chairman, on page 4, it says, notwithstanding any provisions, that's on line 10, may not issue a permit under the following. It doesn't necessarily guarantee they won't issue the permit.
So,
but they can't.
So perhaps I'm just having a hard time understanding how that relates to the issue of non-conforming or the broader category. Can you help me understand that?
Well, I didn't construct as I can't respond. I haven't thought that out that far.
Okay, but
can I take a shot at it, Mr.
Please,
Chairman?
Please.
This is current law, obviously, as everybody in the committee knows full well. And so when Clear Channel or any other company comes to the Department of Transportation, they must bring with them an affidavit from the county or city involved where the sign will be located, and the affidavit must contain a certification that the proposed sign, A, would comply with all applicable ordinances, plans of the county, city or county, or B, is an existing sign that when constructed complied with all applicable ordinances and all, but is now non-conforming. So it just continues the non-conforming thing. But it doesn't, this is for a new permit. It continues for a new a provision that the city says, yeah, it met all our deals at the time it was constructed.
Mr. Chairman,
including non-conforming.
Mr. Chairman, let me try to, my mind starting to work on what was said by the preceding speaker. One of the points that Mr. Doherty mentioned was that a property owner would be able to contact a new sign company. The new sign company would then put a credit on the sign, and then they would they would establish a new permit. What that means then is that the sign that was at that location that was constructed and was non-conforming to that local regulation would still be there. It would still be non-conforming. And what subparagraph B says in that context...
Subparagraph B on in Section 8? Or
Section 8, page 4.
Thank you. Yep.
So what B, subsection B says is that that sign can stay there because it's now non-conforming. And so that is the perpetuation of the non-conformity at the local level, even though it might be conforming under the state law. That's how I see that.
Okay. So I think we've resolved that. What I understood Mr. Barrows to be saying was that the opportunity for a landowner to buy the structure, I understood his contention to be that that opportunity would exist for all signs, and I understood Representative Widener's intent to be that that opportunity would be confined to non-conforming signs.
Well, it's not clear to that. I think that would be extended over time to all signs. I mean, it's practical use.
Clarify your intent.
Maybe we should ask Amy Joyce to come forward and help us understand that piece. And Representative Widener, while she's coming forward, you had a...
I think, from the way I understand things, 95% of the signs are non-conforming right now.
So I don't think that's true. Perfect question to ask as Amy sits down.
Yeah.
No.
And if we could, I would be welcome LC to come in and actually testify as well.
Would you mind finding her? It would be forthcoming, hopefully. Amy, can you help us out of this dilemma, please?
Chair Reed, Chair Bentz, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. I just received these amendments at the very beginning of hearing, so I've been kind of poring over them. So there are two different things, I think, happening here, one of which is on the page 4 where it talks about how the local jurisdiction can sign off. That's true as far as it can go, that a local can say, well, it was nonconforming when constructed, but check the box that, and this would allow the state to write the permit. But I don't see anything in the Dash 13 that restricts this whole scheme for, like, I don't want to use that word, that this whole system to nonconforming signs, whether local or state nonconforming. It just says when the lease is up, this transaction can happen. So I didn't see anything in here, but I confess that I've not had time to thoroughly digest it. So that's what I'm seeing here, Chair.
That's helpful. Thank you. Representative Widener? Any thoughts there? Or it was your intent. Am I remembering
yes,
right?
That the intent was for the non-conforming, and the reason this amendment came about was to basically so we weren't getting because preemptive came up as one of the issues and concerns, and to get the city and counties in support and I think LC could probably explain it.
May I politely ask Mr. Barrows or Mr. Sandblast to let LC come forward and help us through a little bit, too?
Happily, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Actually, if I could real quick.
Okay.
So if you're hung up on this one, would you be supportive of the Dash 10 amendments that we had?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Widener, the answer is no. We had problems with those also.
So let's get the answer from Ms. Elliott on the how the question of non-conforming does or doesn't work. So let me see if I can sum up briefly. The question that I probably take the blame for starting is whether the scenario that a landowner would assert the rights contained in this amendment to buy the sign structure from the sign owner at the end of a lease arrangement is confined to signs that are already non-conforming, or would that be available for all permitted signs? Is that a fair summary of what we're trying to figure out at the moment?
Yeah.
Chair Bentz, I believe that Mr. Barrows and Mr. Sandblast are correct. It currently reads that it is for any outdoor advertising sign, so it is not limited to non-conforming signs. By the way, my name is Heidi Elliott from Legislative Council.
Thank you. Representative Widener?
Yeah, I mean, when you read B as an existing sign that, when constructed, complied with all applicable ordinance, plans, rules, other requirements of the city or county, but is now non-conforming.
So are you saying that this does not meet what your intent was?
I guess it would go into it, and I don't know if there's any issues, but the non-conforming piece, they've already came into conformance with the cities and counties, so the question is if this would change the way they feel about it, but these are conforming signs.
Representative Smith?
Yeah, I'm confused. The way I see 8B, it explicitly calls out non-conforming signs. So if the plain language is clear, then okay, but it's not clear to me. At least what you said isn't clear to me based on how I read that paragraph. So, and maybe I'm reading the wrong paragraph. And if it's unclear, then the intent of the drafter, helps to clarify unclear language.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could help me understand how the language is clear as to the non-conforming or conforming, and if it's not clear, that, to clarify the intent of the drafter.
I think I'm a little confused now. Could you, for my benefit, would you mind trying?
Yeah, I'll try to simplify
again?
For you.
Sure.
Thank you.
So I see 8B. It specifically calls out non-conforming signs. My reading of that would not then, or would match the intent that I've just heard. Okay. So I'd try to understand how the fact that it calls out non-conforming signs means that's not all it calls out. So if you clarify that for me.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, Representative Smith. You're right. Section 8 does call out non-conforming. The issue is that in Section 6, we just say the owner of an outdoor advertising sign. We don't limit that to an owner of a non-conforming sign, which would be the simple fix, or to say that Section 6 applies only to non-conforming signs. That's the issue.
So it's, in essence, it's a question of when could a landowner enter this process. Again, I could be corrected if I'm wrong. I thought I understood the intent to be on non-conforming situations, which is where I at least see a legitimate question about the otherwise sort of even field of negotiation having been tilted because of the fact that the sign is now non-conforming, makes it more valuable. I'm not sure that same distortion exists for all signs.
Well, and if we had one of the sign owners come up, but I think from my understanding, most all the signs are non-conforming. 90-95% of the signs are non-conforming.
Amy, please.
Right now, that we're dealing with under this.
Chair Reed and Representative Widener, I think there may be a split here between the signs within Portland versus the signs statewide. My understanding is that a significant number of the outdoor advertising signs in Portland are non-conforming, at least under the city code. Statewide, it is certainly much less than a majority of signs that are non-conforming under the state code.
I can say I had a conversation with the city of Eugene and then got correspondence from them that indicated they have about 15 non-conforming signs within their city limits, and that represents about 10% of the signs that they have. So I don't know the number statewide either, but at least that's one other data point.
But the ones that are conforming aren't under the same, they don't have sign credits because they are conforming signs, so they don't need a sign credit, correct?
Chair Reed, Representative Widener, no, all outdoor advertising signs along state highways need a state permit, which is part of the permit credit system. So to get a new sign along a state highway, you need a credit. And if I may address the Section 8 sort of question. So what's going on there in ORS 377-723, Section 8, is the basic provision that for ODOT to process an outdoor advertising sign permit, there has to be a sign-off from the local jurisdiction saying, yes, it conforms with our local code, so the state isn't issuing a permit on something that doesn't meet local code. So the addition of 2B there in Section 8 just provides another checkbox on our application that the local can check and say, well, it's non-conforming, but when it was constructed, it also met code. So that's fine as far as it goes in terms of what's trying to happen here in the Dash 13, but nothing in the Dash 13 restricts that whole system to 2B. Certainly, somebody could come in with an application utilizing the Dash 13 provisions with the box check that says meets the local code.
So to break it down for myself, Section 6 defines when you can or landowner can start the process of buying from the sign owner. Section 8 deals just with the issuance of a permit after that process has occurred.
Chair Reed, that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Smith, you're adding to your pile of statute there.
Yeah. I think two books is all I'll need. And I must admit, you know, trying to cross-reference each thing is challenging. You're the drafter?
Yes.
Based on my reading, if it is, based on my reading, Section 8 applies to any, so under 377.723, where's that one? That's here. With regard to the affidavit, if the affidavit is required, if the signed permit is required, it seems that Section 8 of the bill would apply to the whole deal, and that includes the nonconforming language. And admittedly, sitting here today is the first time I'm addressing it, but it seems that one of two things is true. Either the way this amendment is drafted is not conforming with the intent of the requester of the amendment, or it is, and it was done right after all, and that my reading is correct. Is it really that you say the plain language is contra to the intent of the draft requester?
I believe that Section 6 is drafted as contra to the intent of the request, if the intent is to limit it to non-conforming signs.
Other questions? Representative Sheehan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of getting these digital billboards, I agreed to vote for these two amendments. What I think is going to happen is we're going to adopt it, we'll pass it, the Senate will see this and freak out because this is a gigantic change to what they sent over here.
And may I just interrupt and ask what you mean by this?
If we pass this with both of these amendments, the one we just passed and this one, I think it represents a gigantic shift in the intent of what the Senate brought over to us. So I think they're not going to concur, and I think they're going to set up a conference committee where they can fix a lot of the little problems and defects that are in here. So that's kind of my two cents. I'm on board to get that going. So,
thank you. Other questions? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is certainly one legitimate way of resolving some issues. I'm starting to feel uncomfortable, though, that we've delved into an area that certainly, from my knowledge, didn't come up on the Senate side. And we're getting into a new area of relationship between property owner and billboard company or outdoor advertising company. That wasn't in the initial discussions when we first started hearing the bill, and for something that was developed and then made public, I guess I heard someone say 4 hours ago was the first that at least one person was able to review this. I heard about this in a matter of hours previously, although we had heard the concept certainly before. I'm starting to think that this is the kind of area where we need to be more careful. And does it hurt to say, let's just pause, let's wait, we can address this in the next legislative session? Is failure to adopt this amendment going to present a substantial impact for the state or for the industry?
Yeah, I'd just like to point out that the Dash 14s were received this morning as well.
That is certainly true. However, the Dash 14s were identical to the Dash 8s with the exception of the word turn in to word retire. And I have great confidence in your ability to understand those.
Yeah.
Representative Benz, were you seeking recognition?
Just had a thought on the Dash 13s, and I think this probably would have been better addressed to the folks that came up in support of the Dash 13s. And there's a I raise this issue just because I believe this is a very complex area and needs to be managed appropriately. And I want to reemphasize the fact that I personally think that the landowner is deserving of some attention. Exactly how much, I'm not sure. But I note on page 2 of the dash 13 line 26 and 27 says, an appraisal of the replacement value of the sign, comma, as it exists above the surface of the ground. And I'm, my involvement with these signs, there's enormous concrete foundations poured in the ground, put in the ground, carefully installed in the ground, without which the sign is worthless. And in my part of the country, the wind seems to blow every day really hard. Without that concrete, this sign would be worthless. It would be flat on the ground. And it seems to me that this reflects, and probably the assumption of the of somebody was that, gosh, if they're going to leave, they wouldn't have any. They wouldn't want to dig up the concrete and take it with them. But the point of the matter is that I would guess that if someone thought someone that was going to be in competition with you was going to put that to use, you'd dig it up and take it with you. And so this kind of issue needs to be addressed just like many others. This is an easy one. The ones that you have been discussing at this point are much more challenging, much more difficult. And to me, the proper next step would be a work group, and we would then take this up in February. That's my thinking on it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Discussion, Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand where this amendment and the dash 10 amendments came from, and I'm hoping it is in an attempt to benefit the actual property owner as opposed to the sign companies. I'm beginning to question that, because for one thing, I haven't had, unless there's someone here who could speak to this, we haven't had a person here to testify that actually has been in this situation and can speak to their concerns or how they think this would help or not help. So that would help me. The other thing is, I'm not sure that anybody knows the consequences of this amendment at this point in time. And at the risk of agreeing with Representative Bence and having a chair who might decide that payback is fair play, I think this needs to have some work done on it over the interim and have some of these landowners also included as we work this issue, as opposed to just the sign companies.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think last week we did have a property owner in here testifying with me. I can remember it very clearly, and he talked about what was done with him. And questions for LC, would the dash 13 amendments provide full compensation for the property rights of the tenant or the sign owner after its lease with the property owner is terminated? Or if it's expired or any point?
Co-Chair Bent, Co-Chair Reed, Representative Widener, I'm not prepared to answer that at this point.
Well, it seems to me that is part of the very question. I think you said full payment, and so that's part of the question of what that definition is. I mean,
yeah.
here it is in right. In the amendment. It says replacement value and above the surface of the ground, and it sounds like they're...
Right. And that was, so, I mean, this came about because the property owners, I mean, we had property owner here before. Last session when we heard this bill, we just had a public hearing on it. We had a bunch of property owners who had came in and testified, you know, in favor of Senate Bill 607, I believe it was, at that point. And that's where this came about, was we did have a public hearing on it last session. So, and the property owners were in here saying, hey, we need this bill because they're getting shafted all the time. And that's where this came about, and the language, the relating to clause, everything was the exact same. So we can put off for another 2 years and let them keep getting the short end of the stick, or we can adopt these amendments and help out property owners today.
It does, with the passage of the constitutional amendment doesn't have to be 2 years. I would,
yeah.
I would suggest that to you.
So I absolutely agree with Co-Chair Benson's suggestion of a work group, but I wouldn't limit it to this amendment. I think it is. I think there are, and I agree with Vice Chair Beyer that there are major uncertainties. We also really we have yet to see an unbiased study, including the federal study that's still pending, on the impact of these things. We have yet to evaluate.
You're now sort of moving from the contents of the Dash 13s, which don't talk about digital.
Mr. Chair, with respect, my comments are linked to the Dash 13s and why I think a work group should not be limited to the Dash 13s, but overall.
Okay.
So to explain one example of the uncertainties, I don't think the uncertainties are limited to the impact of the Dash 13s. I think if uncertainty is the reason we'd pause on that, we ought to pause on the whole deal, as I think would be the most prudent thing to do. And to continue that one example, I won't give a litany. Right now we have rules about sign placement, whether they should be on intersections, how far they should be apart, and all of those rules based on a regime and a technological context that did not contemplate digital billboards. And there has been almost no consideration or testimony or analysis on that issue, I think, which presents much more uncertainty. So I really agree with the idea of an interim work group. I will have more comments when it comes to the bill itself. So the question here is, which is a better place from which to start that discussion, right? If we're not going to do an interim work group on the whole thing, but we're committed to moving some version of a bill on this very last day, then if we're going to make a very big decision to benefit a significant player, a near monopoly in this space, it seems really appropriate to also consider the impact on property owners and the impact on the smaller players in the market as we do that rather than next. And so even though I also have some questions about this amendment, I do think the amendment gives us a better place from which to start. And it might get finished in the conference committee where they might axe it anyway. At the very least, they'll change it. But I would still support the amendment. And if we're going to do something, if we're going to do a work group, I hope we do it over the whole thing.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I don't see any. Anyone like to make any motions? Representative Sheehan.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 13 amendments to Senate Bill 639, dated June 1st, 2011, be adopted.
Thank you. Representative Sheehan moves the Dash 13 amendments dated June 1st, today, 2011. Is there a discussion of the motion? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And these amendments came about, the Dash 10s were an exact copy of Senate Bill 607, which passed very strongly in the Senate last time. These amendments came about basically for cities and counties and other people who had some issues with preemption. I think this actually gives a lot of power to the cities and counties for actually even acquiring some of these signs if they're on their city lands where they might be leasing the space or have an agreement worked out with the sign owner if they the lease came up and they decided they didn't want the sign in their town. So I think this helps out property owners tremendously, and I think it's a good bill, and we should move it, and if it goes to conference committee, let them work out the details there. But I think the Senate would be very, very supportive of these amendments on the other side after seeing the last bill that came through.
I should have done this before the motion was made, but and I think I got some of this answer, but looking towards there's two and three representatives of cities and local government. I heard people talk about the fact that they believe you're neutral. I'm getting nods all around, so just let the record reflect that that's true. Not to question your assertion, but just to hear it directly is good as well. Other discussion? Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Vice Chair Beyer?
No.
Representative Widener?
Yes.
Representative Smith?
Yes.
Representative Nathanson?
No.
Representative Lindsay?
Yes.
Chair Vance?
No.
Chair Reed?
No. And the motion has failed. Representative Vance?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 639 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz has moved Senate Bill 639 to the floor with the do-pass recommendations. Is there any discussion?
I'd like to... You can go first.
Okay, well, I wanted to make one comment, which is that I'm disappointed in the situation with the Dash 13 amendments, because I do believe that there is a significant issue there, and the... as I sort of mentioned, the third-party action that creates a non-conforming sign, I think, creates a distortion in that relationship, and I think there is a significant ways to go in determining that. I think the Dash 13 Amendment goes a fair distance towards a reasonable resolution of that, but in the late hours here, I am not comfortable with that approach, and so I am very comfortable with the idea that we'll continue to work on that. I think the fact that we're going to be back in February gives us a reason to be diligent and dedicated in that work. All of us as individual members will have two bills. This committee will have five bills to offer. The co-chair and I have talked about the possibility of using one of those bills for this purpose, and the good faith offer from at least the people that we heard from today to continue working on this question gives me some hope about that. So, Representative Weiner, I appreciate you bringing the amendments, and I don't think we're done with this conversation by any stretch. Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I will be voting no, and I want to, for the record and for the gathered hordes, explain why. The first thing I want to cover is the safety concerns. I don't know if they're unsafe or not, but I don't know if they're unsafe or not, and either does anybody else. The Milwaukee Public Works engineer offered the following thoughts. When the board changes, the motorist sees the movement.
This is Milwaukee, Oregon, Milwaukee.
This is Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Wisconsin, India, I think. Wisconsin. These signs are better at getting people's eyes off the road. No one will ever admit they were watching a sign as a reason for the accident. They would never get auto insurance again, so it is very difficult to analyze whether the sign was a reason for the accident. And I take those, and that helps. That I offer those not as proof, but as example of how I sort of think about it, that the reason they're wanted so much by the proprietors is because they're noticed more. It's not just because they flip and therefore they can fit more signs. It's because they're noticed more. Because when we drive down on Salem, or I guess it's that way, it attracts the eye. And maybe attracting the eye off the road isn't a big deal. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it won't cause any additional accidents. It certainly can't be as bad as text messaging. But we just had a big discussion in the last two full sessions about that. And until we get the results of the federal study, I don't see why we're rushing to do this bill until we're confident that it's, in fact, safe. Second, I want to say a little bit about sign numerosity and sign clutter. I don't, my glib comments aside, don't feel a great need to reduce the number of billboards in Oregon. But I also don't think there's a great need to increase them. And if we are taking a situation where right now we have the major part of this 296 unused credits. We're taking some of those credits, which presumably the reason they're unused is because their economic use is not maximized under the current scenario. And we're creating a scenario where it's more likely that they'll be put to higher and more profitable use, which in general context is good. But that does seem very likely to increase the number of signs. And I think that's probably what we're going to do, is increase the number of signs and signs that flip. At the same time, we're not going to be addressing how far apart they are. Maybe ODOT will handle that in rulemaking. The bill doesn't, nothing in the bill contemplates that. None of the testimony contemplated that. There was a question with no particular answer that contemplated that, and which gets back to the safety. And then third is helping the Oregon companies. If we're going to do something that significantly increases or meaningfully increases the number of signs on the road, it seems like our policymaking effort should be focused on Oregon companies and on Oregon property owners, and that's where we should be putting our shoulder to the wheel. And it seems like most of our shoulder of the wheel has been setting that a little bit of aside and addressing instead the state of the order, which I understand. The billboards are expensive, and there's economies of scale, and therefore the 85% of the metro market billboards are owned by a single company, and that company ain't based here. But I don't see why that's our primary objective. It seems like our primary objective should be Oregon companies, safety, and making sure Oregon's a beautiful place, rather than something else. So I'm a no on this bill. I appreciate the work on the amendments. I wish they would have both moved. And when we return to it, I hope we'll return to it globally.
Thank you. Other discussion, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other issue that was raised briefly in testimony that I think we did not adequately review, which an interim work group, for example, could review, is the rationale that, and this is referring to the Dash 13, the rationale for using replacement value rather than fair market value or some other mechanism for determining a fair price. I thought that was not a small issue to raise.
Further discussion? Stand at ease for just a moment.
Representative Widener.
If I may, real quick.
Sure.
Representative Smith and I have different reasons behind this. I'm torn on what to do because the amendments that we adopted, I don't totally agree with in principle. I think we either do digital billboards or we don't, and making them give up credits for the digital billboards, I don't totally agree with. So I'm a little torn on this whole piece of legislation, and then saying you must use this type of energy and all the other stuff that we put in the Dash 14s. So I'm a little torn on an aye or no vote on this because I want them to have the ability to have their digital billboards, but I don't think we should be putting mandates on how they do it. But I realize that in the era of government that we're in now, we do that to businesses all the time, and I don't totally agree with it. So I want to get that on the record.
Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Lindsay.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion about confusion and not understanding the intent and clear reading of the statute. Section F of the Dash 14, if available, where the digital billboard is located, uses renewable energy resources to power the digital billboard, included but not limited to the following: wind energy, solar, photovoltaic, and solar thermal energy, wave, tidal, ocean thermal energy, geothermal energy, and the purchase of carbon credits. And if the wind energy is used, as specified in subparagraph FI of this paragraph, uses moving parts for the purpose of generating the wind energy to power the billboard. If available. There's several attorneys on this panel right here. You can thread that left and right. If available. Definitely opens the door to abuse of discretion.
The discussion. Representative Sheehan.
I just want to say that I love digital billboards. I think we just need to pass this thing. I love digital billboards so much, I'm willing to let you use wave energy to power the things. So let's just do it. Please.
Sounds like a good place to start with the vote, unless there are other comments. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Byer?
Aye.
Really mixing it up.
Yeah. It's a new order.
Aye.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Lindsay?
No.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Chair Vance?
Yes.
Chair Reed?
Aye. Motion having received required majority is declared passed.
I think Sheehan should power it with riding his bike.
Bloody,
get on it.
Do it, man.
It's a good suggestion. Unless others are...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wyden.
I would like to change my vote, if I may.
I think at this point, since I dropped the gavel, we would need to suspend...
Make a motion to reopen?
I'll get there. Just a second. Do we have to suspend the rules, correct? Okay, so... request unanimous consent that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Widener to change his vote. Is there any objection?
I forget what his vote was.
His vote was aye.
You still get
no objections.
No objections from Representative Widener. We'll see if there are any
no objections.
Anyone else.
So if he changes the vote, then...
It will be 5-3. Should add to the add to that request.
Yeah.
The
right. So it's late in the day for math. Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. So without objection, the rules are suspended. Representative Widener, how do you vote?
No.
Representative Widener votes no. The motion, having received the required majority, is still passed. Drop the gavel again. Unless there are others who are eager to carry the bill, I would be willing to carry it. And welcome comments from
Representative Sheehan. Loves billboard.
I hope he will chime in to say that on the floor as well. And so we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 639 and open a work session on Senate Bill 958. Zach.
Senate Bill 958 defines mobile vehicle crusher and crush motor vehicle and establishes requirements for both.
Thank you. We heard a while ago. Is there any discussion on the bill, or anyone want to hear from proponents again? I don't see any. Representative Benz?
I think it's 958, isn't it?
958, yes.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 958 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves Senate Bill 958 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
What was this one?
This was, as it indicates on the agenda, defines mobile, and as Zach just summarized, defines mobile motor vehicle crusher and crushed motor vehicle, and establishes requirements for the use of mobile motor vehicle crushers by dismantlers.
Thank you.
No other discussion. Is there any objection to the motion? Representative Smith, it's to send Senate Bill 958 to the floor as, actually not as amended, but to the floor with a due pass recommendation. No objections. Motion carries. Senate Bill 958 goes to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there anyone who would be willing to carry this bill? Representative Widener will carry. Thank you. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 958. And to the great joy, I'm sure, of everyone who's here, we need to take a brief recess. Back in a moment. come back to order. Thank you for your patience, and particularly thank you to the Health Care Committee, who's letting us run a little bit over. Open the work session on Senate Bill 128. Zach?
Senate Bill 128 removes obsolete reporting dates for the Road User Fee Task Force. We have the Dash 9 and the Dash 8 amendments in front of us.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam, tell us about these amendments, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. This is a dump and stuff, and I think it's something that you all have faced, and that is just simply this. One constituent to each of us is very important. We've worked this through. It was unfortunately a victim of the mobile legislative crusher, and now we found an opportunity in a vehicle in this committee, and I'm glad you're willing to at least take a look. Quite simply, this just gives Jim Altizer from Estacada the opportunity to park, this is important, to park his dump trucks up to 7. I could be wrong, but I don't believe there's anybody in this room who's come forward to be in opposition. In fact, this has been worked out pretty carefully with county folk, and that's where we come up with the number 7. When I say park, that's all I mean. This is not to operate his operation, his business on the property. It's to make it possible to park them so that he can operate his business during the day. Testimony was heard yesterday, including that of Jim Altizer, who cannot be here 2 days in a row in Salem because he is working. We've got a number if you want to talk to him personally. And I also had a senator who heard the testimony yesterday here, but he had to go to another meeting. That's my testimony, Mr. Chair, and I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. I'm not sure everybody caught the reference to our previous bill, but I appreciated it.
Thank you.
Are there any questions, discussion with Representative Gilliam? I don't see any. And as a reminder, there are some other things that are in the underlying bill that the amendment fixes a conflict that we had based on a bill that was passed to the Revenue Committee across the floor, and the House and the Senate has already been signed. And then we've also talked about the other things that the bill does. We heard from the Department of Transportation that they were comfortable with the other components of the bill. So I think we are there. And, Senator Thompson has returned. Thank you for coming back. So we heard a brief introduction of the amendments from Representative Gilliam, but we're happy to hear from you as well.
Great. Thank you. Chuck Thompson, Hood River County District, Senate District 26. We had a courtesy hearing yesterday, a gentleman named Jim. I talked to him earlier. It was a tough one to – we asked – Hauser.
Altizer, we heard Altizer.
Yeah. He called me on the phone earlier, has had some trouble over the past 6 years. The Clackamas County's tried to deal with this issue to no avail, and it's finally come to maybe some civil action. This gentleman lives real close to my district. That's why I talked to him. He does, and he is in Representative Sheehan's district where he buys his tires and buys his gas. He's in a tough spot. This is pretty much a deal killer for him if he's not able to park his trucks on his land, his forest land. Then him and the 7 folks that work for him will go out of business. I've seen this before, like in our county, where we've had issues, and mainly they're neighborhood issues. But I believe with the amendment from 10 down to 7, the size of a dump truck and a trailer is probably the same size as a logging truck. So I don't think visually it should be any different. But I support this amendment, and hope you folks will too. Thanks.
Thank you. And it's worth noting something you said, or highlighting something you said, that it's already, if I understood you correctly, it's already the case that what you're proposing here applies to log trucks,
yes.
And this would extend that to dump trucks. Is that right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly right.
Thank you. Any other conversation? Nancy, Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 128.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 128, dated today, June 1st, 2011. Is there discussion of the motion? Are you drawing pictures of them? I guess that counts as discussion. Any objections to the motion? I don't see any. The Dash A9 amendments are adopted. Representative Benz.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1.
Mrs. Wells.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of yes, Zach.
Moving Senate Bill 128 as amended to the floor without the proper paperwork.
Want that motion?
As he said, you're passing the ball to me. Representative Bence has moved that we suspend the rules for the purposes of passing Senate Bill 128 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And as a note, colleagues, this is the thing we get to do occasionally on the last day. We have received approval from the respective speaker's offices in order to do this without the fiscal and revenue statements. Is that
yes, sir?
Fair summary? Okay, so the motion is first to suspend the rules. Is there any objection to that motion? I don't see any. Motion carries. Representative Bence.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 128 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Bence moves Senate Bill 128 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very, very brief. Senate Bill 128, before it was amended, wasn't a bill I really thought we needed anyway, and would have been very happy to let it die here in committee. And the amendment is an amendment. I voted against the bill on the floor of the House. So altogether, there isn't anything in it that I really care about, so I'm a no on this bill.
I wonder if it's possible to be a double no.
Yeah, I'd try if I could.
Thank you for the comments. I share some of your concern about the underlying piece of the bill, and it'd be interesting to see how it is received in the Senate based on amendments and so on. Representative Widener.
The only objection I have is to Representative Gilliam's tie. Other than that, I'm ready to vote on this.
I don't know why you limit your objection to Representative Gilliam's tie, but Representative Gilliam, but I understand that. Any other discussion? I don't see any objection. Oh, well, recognizing Representative Byers, no vote. Are there any others who would like to be a no on the bill? Seeing none, let's record the vote that Representative Byer has voted no and others have voted yes. Motion having received the required majority declared passed. We need a carrier.
I'll carry it.
Representative Bence will carry the bill. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 128. And I always want to be careful before I drop the gavel, because this is the last time we'll have to do it. Do we have anything else we need to take care of? Okay. Anything else to come before the committee? Thank you very much for your patience. We're adjourned.